The contents of this podcast episode may be triggering and emotionally challenging to some audiences due to a discussion around suicide, self-harm, depression, and/or a reference to other mental health disorders. Continue at your own discretion. Welcome to the To Be Honest podcast. Today, I am overjoyed that I get to speak with Alicia Gibson, the Connection Director at Venture Christian Church. Alicia is an avid reader, foodie, history lover, and practices yoga regularly. On today's episode, she'll be sharing about her experience with panic attacks, self-harm, suicidal ideation, and OCD, as well as the positive benefits of cognitive behavioral therapy. So welcome to the podcast, Alicia.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me. Before we get into your story, I like to ask every guest, to be honest, how are you doing today?
To be honest, I am pretty tired, but today's my day off, so I'm enjoying a little bit of rest today, taking a little bit slower than normal.
Good. Yay. I love to hear that. But yeah, we all need those like self-care, like personal days just to relax and do our thing. So I'm glad that today is that day for you. And that you're taking the time to talk to me during that day.
Totally, yeah. It's exciting.
Yeah. So to start off, I'd love to hear a bit about your experience, your first experience with mental health. Like, what were your first symptoms? And when did you first experience those symptoms?
Honestly, I don't remember a time when I wasn't anxious. So my earliest memories, even being like toddler age, I remember feeling anxious, but I had no concept for what that even was. So I just assumed everybody felt that way. And so that was just a lot of nervousness, jumpiness, even just like tightness in your chest. And it wasn't until I was older and I started getting help that I realized, oh, everybody doesn't feel this way. This isn't how I always have to feel. Yeah, it really, I think it hit a really noticeable point whenever I was around 13, though, was when it started really becoming obvious to me that what I was dealing with was affecting my life and my ability to interact with other people and focus on school and just do all the things that I was having to do at that age.
Yeah. Yeah. I know that you've shared with me that between the ages of 13 and 17 that you experienced panic attacks and you have some experience with self-harm and suicidal ideation. So would you mind sharing a bit more about that time in your life? And specifically, like, was there anything that specifically led to like thoughts about suicide?
I really had no context for mental health related issues or anything. At the time, like people weren't really talking about it, which is part of why I love things like this, because now people are talking about it. But like to write Love on Her Arms was the only thing I'd ever heard of resource-wise. And that didn't come out until I was like in high school. So as a kid and growing up where I did, there just wasn't a lot of context or verbiage for me to even explain what was going on. But I think a lot of my issues, whenever it really became obvious, was I started noticing like obsessing over things that really made me feel afraid or nervous or anxious. So maybe I would hear something that really disturbed me, or I would see something that was kind of freaky and I just couldn't let it go. And kind of just like obsessing over it. And from that 13 to 17, it just became more and more consuming in my life. And there was less and less of an ability to think about anything else. Which I think the OCD side of things really plays into there. But I think with the suicidal ideation, I think there was a lot of just exhaustion that started happening when I was around 16. So there'd been 3 years of really solid, constant fear and panic. And it had gotten to the point where I wasn't really sleeping. I wasn't really eating. I wasn't really taking care of myself. And I think there was a level of so much just, I can't keep doing this. Like, I'm so tired, that led to some of the suicidal ideation of just like, this seems like the only way to rest, you know? I think also though, along with the idea of like the obsessive compulsive disorder and everything, and the intrusive thoughts that come along with it, I think the idea of kind of the suicidal ideation stuff was a bit of an idea of like, I think I need to protect the world from my brain. Like, I think there's something maybe wrong with me, and I think I might be a danger to myself and others. So I think I need to remove myself from the situation. And I think that's a lot of where those thoughts stemmed from. So it's kind of twofold in that way.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing about that, because I know it is a sensitive topic for a lot of people. So I appreciate you being so like open about it. And I know that self-harm was kind of a coping tool for you during that time. So do you mind sharing a bit about that and how you felt during that time and what self-harm kind of, or how it was kind of an escape as well for you?
So I was dealing with depression and anxiety, which sadly they tend to travel together. And my suicidal thoughts and self-harm were kind of attached in how they were toggling between the anxiety side and the depression side. So partially with the depression, I was struggling to feel much of anything. And then that mixed with the anxiety, it was like, okay, all I feel is fear. I can't feel anything else. And so there wasn't a piece of the self-harm that was, well, at least I can feel something. Like, this makes me feel more like I'm still here. Like, it was almost like it brought me back to the like reality, I thought. But it was kind of interesting because it was almost more of a cycle. So the self-harm piece would kind of make my body, I think, panic even more, which would lead to more. And it was just kind of this cycle, but definitely an attempt to try to feel something. I think a big piece of it too, though, was feeling like I was somehow in control, because I felt like I can't control my thoughts. I don't know how to control my feelings. I feel like my mental health issues are controlling me. So this is at least something that I can control. And especially dealing with intrusive thoughts and that feeling like I didn't know that intrusive thoughts were something that like happened. I thought that it was just me and something was wrong. And so it felt like, okay, well, maybe this is a way that I can control what I'm thinking, and almost in like a punishment kind of way, like this thought, I don't want to have this thought. So this is a way that I can tell myself, don't have this thought. So yeah, a lot of that control and thinking that I was in control, and yet it's spiraling me farther out of control.
Yeah. So, yeah. Such an interesting cycle to put yourself in, even though like you don't realize it probably in the moment. It's probably looking back, it's very clear now that it was kind of a downward spiral. But yeah, it's just so interesting when you're actually in it, it feels so different. Would you mind touching a bit on what it feels like essentially to have intrusive thoughts? I think that's kind of, I think people deal with it a lot, but maybe, yeah, I'd just love to hear your take on it.
So the way I've described it to folks who like haven't or have no context for what that is or don't know what intrusive thoughts are, it's kind of like if you're driving and you've got the window down and you've got your hand out the window, and I'm just kind of like, I tend to drive with my hand out the window, and maybe I'm like playing with my ring on my finger. And it's my wedding ring. And I'm like, oh, I have this thought of, man, if I like slid that too far down my finger, it could fall and I could lose that ring, which is a normal thought to have. Mm-hmm. And typically you'd be like, oh, well, that's not going to happen because it fits my finger fine. And you move on with your life.
Yeah.
But with intrusive thought, for me, it was more like, oh my gosh, do I want to lose the ring? Does that mean that I'm not happy in my relationship? Like, it turns into this whole thing where I can't let it go. So that's like the way I've tried to explain it to folks who maybe haven't experienced intrusive thoughts. I think everybody kind of technically does, because we all have those weird thoughts of, man, that would be weird if that happened. But it's the difference in being able to let go versus fixating on it. So for me, with my intrusive thoughts, a lot of them were pretty violent. And I, being the person that I am, who I can't watch action movies, I can't watch anything that's like the least bit violent because of my anxiety. And I know that's a boundary that I set for myself. So the fact that I was having these thoughts when I intentionally don't watch these things was really like confusing to me. And it was usually in relation to the people that I cared the most about. And so I think that was part of why it was so spirally and panicky, because I wasn't able to say, oh, this is a weird thing that my brain is doing. But instead I was like, oh my gosh, do I want that? Like, I mean, I remember, you know, being a teenager and, you know, having to unload the dishwasher and you're putting knives away and feeling like, I don't know if I'm safe to hold this knife right now because I've had these thoughts about hurting myself or other people. Does that mean I want to do that? And just like that, that spiral, and just with having no idea that intrusive thoughts are, they don't make you crazy. I really thought that something was deeply wrong with me. And that definitely led a lot to, like I said, the self-harm piece was like, maybe this is a way that I can try to control these thoughts that are freaking me out.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And then it sounds like OCD like plays a huge role in those intrusive thoughts and the anxiety. Would you mind sharing a bit about like what OCD looks like for you?
Yeah, it's a lot of fixation. I'm definitely like, I tend to be more of a control freak in general. I don't know if that has to do with the OCD or just my personality type, but when I'm having my OCD like symptoms or there's more of a flare up, it's so much worse. And a lot of it is, you know, I'm not really particular about certain things. It's more like, you know, if I have an intrusive thought, I don't know how to let go of it. If I'm worried about something, if anxiety's flaring up, even if it's just, I feel anxiety in my body and there's not a thought attached to it, I can't let it go sometimes. And I think the thing that OCD tries to tell me is that if I stop thinking about whatever the thing is, then it's going to happen. As opposed to being able to employ just logic and what I know is true and say, well, I know that that person's safe, or I know that I'm safe, or I know that this situation's okay, or whatever. Instead, my brain kind of feels like as long as I keep fixating on it, I'm in control of it, which has been at different points in my life, definitely kind of a cage, because it's hard to focus on the things that you need to focus on. It's definitely been something that's impeded my life at different phases, for sure.
Yeah. Sounds extremely difficult to like manage your thoughts during those times when it's heightened.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have certain like tools or methods that you like go to when you can feel maybe your OCD is heightened in those moments?
I think a lot of it is preventative care at this point. I have to be pretty intentional about taking care of myself, even just with really basic stuff. Like if I notice, oh, I'm starting to like have, you know, this kind of spirally panicky feeling, so much of the time I'll be like, how much water have I drank today? And if I'm dehydrated or I'm hungry or I don't have much sleep, a lot of the time that will make it worse. So if I can be intentional about those things, that can prevent me from getting to that point in the first place. But once I'm there, you mentioned earlier that I love yoga. Like yoga is a big piece of it. I think because the symptoms of the OCD and also just the anxiety and all the many multifaceted pieces of my mental health journey, they kind of make me feel less connected to myself and to reality. And so the things that I do for yoga, when you're deep breathing and you're kind of connecting the movement of your body to your breath and you're noticing things like, oh, this is what the mat feels like underneath me and those kinds of things, it brings you back into reality around you and it kind of brings you out of your own head. And that is the biggest thing for me, is just what are the ways that I can get out of myself in these moments when I feel panicky or the symptoms are really bad.
Yeah.
And that could be one of my favorite things to do, is so easy, is just go outside. I think just being outside, looking at like, okay, the trees are so much bigger than me. The sky is so much bigger than me. It makes me feel like, okay, I'm connected to something that's bigger. I'm not the biggest thing here. And so it's not up to me to control everything. They're really simple things, but it takes a lot of intentionality, especially if you're dealing with like, in phases when I'm feeling more depressed and depression's more of an issue, it's hard to motivate yourself to be like, okay, I'm just going to walk outside. But practicing those things regularly when you feel good, mm-hmm. sometimes can make it easier to do when you feel bad as well. So those are lifesavers for me.
That's awesome. I love that. I feel like I'm on a big like mindfulness kick recently. You know, like if you're in, I like being out in nature and just like observing your environment, like using all your senses, and like stay grounded, and just like appreciate the things around you. I guess that's how I use it. But yeah, I love how you just feel like a small speck on a, I always say like a small speck on like a floating rock. So
yes, I love it.
Giving yourself like perspective is really awesome. But yeah, thank you so much for sharing some of your like tips and tools. I think that's really helpful. And I kind of wanted to dive into at the time when you sought help. When did you first realize that maybe you should seek professional help for your mental health?
So I lived in kind of a silence with it for a long time. Again, I didn't know that it was okay to have these problems. I didn't know that I really truly believed that I was the only one who was dealing with these things, which looking back, I'm like, of course, none of us are completely alone in the things. But at the time, I really thought that something was like I was the special case. And so I was really afraid to tell anybody what was going on. But when I was 16, it got to a point with the suicidal ideation where I think I just kind of realized like, wow, I'm having these thoughts and these and I feel like these are things that I want. But I don't think that's actually what I want to do. So kind of like this weird, feels like there's kind of two sides of yourself that are pulling in these directions. And that was kind of what pushed me to share. And so I actually talked to my mom and it was truly one of the most terrifying conversations that I've had because I didn't know what she was going to do. And, you know, I also just didn't want to like worry her. But I told her and she handled it like so well. To this day, it's like one of the really significant conversations of my life because she was like, she wasn't judgmental at all. And she also didn't freak out on me. She wasn't like, oh my gosh. But she was like, well, you know, I know a lot of people deal with this. And I was like, really? And she is like, I can understand why, you know, this is where you are. But, you know, I think we can find some help. And so she helped me get in with a therapist. And she was a cognitive behavioral therapist. And that literally changed my life. And the first while that I was going, I felt weird about it. Like I didn't want my friends to know that I was going and I felt kind of weird walking in. But then as I started getting like experiencing healing and help, it became more of a thing of like, yeah, this is where I'm going. And this is what I'm doing. I'm helping myself. Like I'm figuring this out. And yeah, it was really totally worth it. And I am like the biggest believer in therapy now. I think it doesn't matter who you are. I think everybody should go to therapy.
Agreed. It's so helpful just to like work out even the smallest of problems in your life. Like absolutely. Someone to bounce ideas off of or like help you navigate things. It's so, so helpful.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Would you mind sharing a bit about like what cognitive behavioral therapy looks like compared to other types of therapy and like what your overall experience with it was?
It was all very helpful, but the biggest piece was helping me with the self-harm. Because a lot of what my counselor's name was Reagan. A lot of what Reagan was having me do was kind of rewire the way my brain was processing information and kind of helped me realize like, I am the one with the power. Like my brain doesn't have power over me. Like it's my brain. And I can choose health and I can choose hope and I can choose all these things that I really thought that I didn't have access to. So, you know, one of the things was helping me figure out what are the cycles that my brain's going through that are leading to things like panic attacks or self-harm. And how do I start to shift those patterns in my life toward things that will help me with healing and show me that I do in fact have the power in my life. So even just like there was a point in time when she had given me like a little thing of Play-Doh. And so she was like, okay, every time you're noticing, we'd figured out kind of a pattern of this is where this cycle for the panic attacks specifically are going. So every time you're going into that place, you've got your Play-Doh and you're going to like make something with your Play-Doh. And so then that starts to kind of like, you know, you've got your neural pathways and I've described it before, like there's a trench that's dug in your brain and it's easy to fall into that trench because it's so deep. But every time you do something else, you're digging a new trench and eventually that new trench will be deeper and it'll be the easier one to fall into. And so in the Play-Doh thing, it's like, well, once I've done the Play-Doh instead of the self-harm enough times, then when my brain feels anxious, I'm going to think about Play-Doh because that's going to be the deeper trench. And so that was the big thing with the cognitive behavioral. I've experienced a few other types of therapy since too, because I am still in therapy. I love therapy. But cognitive behavioral was such a good first step into getting help.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, I love that she gave you Play-Doh to, well, one, as almost not a distraction, but also to express how you're feeling through this dough form.
Yeah, absolutely.
I love that you, the way you described it as digging a trench so that it does become the go-to response instead of something that's harmful. I think that's pretty amazing that she helped you through that. So shout out to all CBT therapists out there.
Yes, absolutely.
How did you feel about receiving an official diagnosis?
So I had been seeing Reagan for therapy for a year, I think. And she told me at one point, she was like, we've worked through so much stuff. And I really think that what you're dealing with, isn't just a trauma-based thing or whatever. I think there's a chemical imbalance here. And so she recommended that I see a psychiatrist because she's like, I think there's more help for you than I'm able to give in this setting. So I went to the psychiatrist. And so they have this whole evaluation thing that they do. And they diagnosed me with generalized anxiety disorder, major depressive disorder, obsessive compulsive disorder, and ADD at the time, which is ADHD now. And going in, I was really nervous because I kind of felt if they give me a diagnosis, is that going to make me think differently about myself? Or is that going to make what I'm dealing with feel bigger or scarier? But it did the total opposite because it gave me a name for what was going on. And again, kind of that idea of I am the one who has the power in my life. And so being able to say, instead of saying, oh, I feel weird, being able to say, I have generalized anxiety disorder. There's so much freedom there in just being able to name the thing. And I think it gave me access to more resources as well, because then as I'm looking at, okay, what are ways that I can learn about this thing, or if I want to research, what are ways to cope with it? I have a word and a name for it that I can then use. So it was, I definitely went into it expecting negative, and I came out feeling really empowered.
Good. Yeah, that's amazing. I think a lot of people feel the way that you feel, and it's so comforting to know that others, are feeling the same things essentially. And even if you are putting a label on it, it's just nice to know that that you're not alone, essentially, is that there are other people. And I think that's kind of builds a community a little bit when you do, especially find other people with a similar diagnosis too.
It was kind of just this is so normal that there's a name for it. Mm-hmm. I think that was kind of the thing that was so comforting too, was not only am I not the only one, but this is so common mm-hmm. that they have a name.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And you've mentioned to me that you've been taking medication for your mental health for the past 10 years now. What were your initial thoughts towards medication? I know sometimes people have a stigma against it. So I'm curious, what was your experience when you were first told that you should be on medication?
It was honestly a really kind of difficult journey. So I grew up in the South on the East Coast. And so it's a more traditional culture. It's definitely more traditionally religious in a lot of ways. And so there was a lot of stigma around it. I definitely felt like if I take this medicine, maybe that means that I don't trust God. If I take this medicine, maybe that means that I'm not strong enough to do this on my own. There's a lot of different thoughts with it. I was also just scared because I'd never known anybody maybe I knew people who were taking medication, but I didn't know anybody who was talking about taking medication or would share that they were. So I also just didn't know what the experience would be like. But again, my mom was really influential in that process because she just really helped me kind of wrap my head around okay, if you're physically sick, you're going to go to the doctor and you're going to get medicine. And that's why doctors exist. And that's a good thing. And you've done that your whole life. And this is the same thing. And so I think there was a lot of reassurance there. And truly, like, the experience with medication when I first got on it was really powerful. That was the first time that I realized that I'd always been anxious. I remember, you know, it takes a little bit of time for medicine to kick into your system. But once I started feeling it, it kind of felt like if you have never worn glasses and you didn't realize you needed glasses and you put the glasses on and you're like, wow, I can see leaves on trees. Like, this is how other people have been able to see how I'm supposed to be able to see, but I just wasn't able to because I couldn't. And that was very much what it felt like. I've also described it as it felt kind of like there'd been a visor over my face and suddenly it like came off and I was able to feel so many things I'd not been able to feel. I felt a lot more courageous, even just socially. Yeah, there were a lot of things that I didn't realize I was capable of that I then had access to because my brain just needed a little bit of help.
Yeah, definitely. So. Yeah. I love all your analogies, by the way. I'm a visual person. So just like whenever you describe something, I'm like, oh yeah, that makes sense. It makes perfect sense.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. It's the only way I know how to communicate. Yeah.
I think it's great. Did you feel like there are any drawbacks or negative sides to taking medication throughout your journey with figuring out like what works for you?
There were definitely some hard phases. Overall, it's been overwhelmingly positive. But when I was in college, we ended up transitioning to a different medication. And that process was difficult. So I had been on one medication and it just didn't really feel like it was helping. And it totally makes sense, just body chemistry, brain chemistry, everything. And so my psychiatrist recommended that I come off of that and try something else. And coming down off the medication was difficult for sure, just withdrawal symptoms and that kind of thing. And then also just having to kind of be without that support that I had been having from the medicine. And the first one that we tried was not a good fit. We had tried it because we had found out that one of my family members actually had been taking it and it had been good for them. And so we tried that and I did not respond well. Like, it made me feel sick and it made my depression worse. It was just not good. And so I had to come back down off of that. And the withdrawals from that one were pretty significant. So that process was definitely difficult, but I was still seeing my therapist. And so every week I'm able to talk through, okay, here's what's happening. And she was able to help me remember, like, well, you're using the same tools that we have been using, like whether you've got, you know, the medication or it's causing problems or not, you still have your tools. And then we got to the new medication that I've been on now for quite a long time. And it's more of a cocktail. I take a couple of different things now so that kind of addresses the depression and the anxiety. So there's definitely a little bit of a journey sometimes whenever you are finding the right medication, but it's totally worth it.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. If someone listening is a little hesitant to start medication, their doctor has told them that it could be beneficial for them, what advice would you give them?
I would say it's worth a try. It's totally worth a try. And then also just recognize your support group. Like, who do you have around you, whether it's a therapist or a friend, somebody that you can be honest with, because just being able to process what you're feeling as the changes are happening can be really helpful, but it's totally worth it. And there is so much freedom. So,
yeah, thank you for sharing that. I think, yeah, I mean, being in the mental health field from like a non-clinical side, like I just hear stories a lot of people's experience with medication and how it can be so beneficial. So I just want to help like reduce the stigma around it because it's not for everyone, but it can help a lot of people. So yeah, just wanted to throw that out there. But yeah, I'd love to chat a bit about like your current life and happening. So how do you currently maintain your mental health?
I pretty much live outside. It's a benefit of living in the Bay Area is that it's usually nice outside. And so that's really helpful. I think too, just community is a big piece of it. Having people who I feel safe to share everything with and who will check on me. If you're in a phase where maybe like last year, I had a little bit of a flare up with the depression and it's hard to reach out when you're in that place. When you have people who will reach in, that makes such a difference. And so having those people who will pursue you is a big piece of my mental health right now. I think too, awareness of my body just in general. I think there's so much like physiology attached to mental health. And if I am aware of, okay, how's my breathing right now? Am I like slumping my shoulders? Am I getting good oxygen? Or are my hands really tight? Or, you know, just different things within my body that are easy to not recognize. But if I stay tuned into those things, I can notice that anxiety is kind of happening before it really happens. And I can do pretty simple things like, oh, I'm just going to like push my shoulders back and make sure that my lungs can get good air. Or I'm just going to kind of release my hands so that I feel this sense of like physical safety, things like that. And I think to, like I said, the preventative care of things where it's, I'm making sure that I'm eating well and making sure that I'm staying well hydrated. If I didn't get good sleep the night before, having grace for myself that I might feel more anxious today, but that's not a reason to freak out. I just didn't get good sleep. Yeah. Those kinds of things are super helpful.
I love that you have such a like focus on self-care because that's so important for everyone, but especially individuals who do have mental health challenges. It's like one of the top priorities or, you know, top things that you can do to help your mental health. I'd love to hear more about your experience with yoga because I know that's something you're really into. So do you mind sharing a bit about how you got into yoga, how it's helped you, and also like what your usual practice looks like, if it's like a daily thing or like weekly thing?
I found yoga, I was in college, so it was a little while after I'd started, you know, feeling better and figuring out how to manage my symptoms and all of that. And we had a membership at the YMCA and they were having classes. And so it wasn't even at like an actual yoga studio or anything. And I was like, yeah, might as well give it a shot. And it was just such a unique experience. It was nothing like anything I had experienced before because my counselor had been helping me notice my body. But in so much of our culture, I feel like we're not encouraged to pay attention to those kinds of things. And so I didn't have any other context where I was being encouraged to like, oh, what are you noticing? And I remember I'm very like type A, like achiever type. And so I remember the instructor saying things like noticing things in your body without judgment, like noticing how you feel in this pose. And it's okay, however you feel in this pose. You don't have to feel like I am killing this right now. Just however you feel. It's good. That's where you are right now. And so I think that just started to affect the rest of my life too, instead of feeling like, well, why am I not, you know, far enough along in this area or that area, kind of being more at peace with just recognizing this is where I am. And that's okay. So a big part of just my practice now even is trying to spend my time in that space without judgment of myself and just accepting where I am right now. And then trying to carry that on into the rest of my life. At the time, all through college, I was like really hardcore. So it was like, I would say 5 days out of the week, I was at a studio. And I remember living on the East Coast, we got snowed in at one point and I was like, oh, I need my yoga. So I'm like figuring out how to do it by myself at home. And then I haven't joined a studio or anything in a few years, but I just practice at home. And I kind of like that because I can do whatever I feel like I need to do today. So that can look like, you know, today I just really need to focus on the restorative. And I don't need to push myself, but other days I've got a lot of energy and I want to like work on some poses that take a little bit more strength. So that's pretty nice. I honestly, to be honest, I am not as regular with yoga lately as I would like to be. So it is more of like weekly ? And then of course, emergency yoga is definitely a thing. Like I feel anxious. I need to work it out on the mat. So
that's great. Yeah. I love that it's translated into your daily life of just the acceptance part and letting things go and just kind of accepting where you are currently is so hard sometimes. I think that translating into your everyday life is so powerful. So I love that. And you're now married and have a great network of friends. So I was wondering if for any young adult listening, especially those who are in high school and maybe struggling with their mental health, do you have any advice that you would give them about their mental health and what their future could look like? Not that everyone's future is the same, but just in general, like what a future with mental health could be.
I think first off, your brain chemicals do change as you get older. And the hardest place to be with brain chemistry is high school age. And I remember somebody telling me that. It might have been my therapist. It might have been my mother. I don't remember who. But somebody had told me, like, it's going to get better. Like, your brain is going to calm down. It's going to finish developing and it's going to be easier. And I didn't believe them, but it was totally true. Like, on top of, you know, having medication and the therapy, once I hit like 25 and like the whole prefrontal cortex is finished developing, I felt different. Like, I felt like I had more executive control over what my brain was doing. So there's that piece. But more than that, though, I think my encouragement and advice is just, you really, truly are not alone. And it's so easy to feel like you are. It's been a long time since I've been in high school, but when I was in high school, there's so much isolation at times if you're feeling like you can't share what's actually going on, because maybe people won't accept you or people won't understand, but you're not actually alone. And I remember feeling like, especially when I was struggling with the panic attacks and just not knowing how I could continue to function, I wasn't sure I was going to make it, really and truly. I had these thoughts of like, I don't know, will I graduate from high school? Like, will I be able to have a job someday? Like, all of this kind of stuff. And when I graduated from high school, I got my class ring. I don't know if people do that anymore, but I got my class ring, and I still wear it sometimes because it's a reminder of, I didn't think I was going to make it, and I did, and here I am. And not only did I graduate high school, but like, I'm in a master's program right now. I've been married for 8 years. I have a job where I literally, my job is to help people find community. So like, all these things that never in a million years would I have thought that I would someday be capable of. And yet here I am. And so there is so much hope, even when it feels like there's not hope, and you're not alone. And so don't do it alone. Find your people.
I love that. Thank you so much for giving your advice. And also just for being on the podcast in general and being so open and sharing your experience. I think a lot of people will relate to it. I think you have some really important things to share. So I just want to say, yeah, thank you so much for coming on here today and taking the time to talk to me. But yeah, where can people go to learn more about you? Or if you have any like resources that you'd like to share, I'll give you the time to do so.
I'm not really big on social media, but people are welcome to follow me on Instagram. My tag is Alisha Hutch Gibson. So A-L-I-S-H-A. Hutch, like a hutch, and then Gibson. But again, it's not super exciting on there. But a great way to find me, though, is anything that's happening at Venture Christian Church. I pretty much live there. My husband and I both work there. And we're a church that's really values destigmatizing mental health, which I find a lot of pride in because I did not grow up around that within Christianity. So there's that piece. And then, yeah, I think those are the main things. Resource-wise, I have been seeing a few different therapists at the San Jose Christian Counseling Center. They've been fabulous. And whether you're a Christian or not, like, they can do whatever, go whatever direction. And they have some really, really fabulous counselors there. So also recommend that.
Thank you. Yeah, we can link to everything that you just mentioned in the episode notes so people can just go ahead and click and learn more information. But yeah, thank you again. I hope we can stay in touch and we'll talk again soon.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Thanks. Bye. Thanks for listening to the To Be Honest podcast. We are incredibly grateful for your support over the last 4 seasons and look forward to sharing even more personal mental health journeys and stories in the future to help normalize the conversation around this topic. To Be Honest is a program of Momentum for Health that encourages youth and young adults ages 14 to 25 to express themselves through creative media and seek help in times of need. If you or a loved one is looking for behavioral health services, please call 988 to locate options available in your area. Season 4 of the podcast is hosted and edited by me, Avery Cruz. We'll also be incorporating a few special episodes into the season, created and recorded by a handful of our Youth Advisory Board members who will be introduced in future episodes. The podcast theme music was created by Julia Steele. To learn more about the To Be Honest program, please visit www.tobehonest.today and follow us on Instagram for the latest news at tobehonest.today. Bye!